So we're continuing with questions. And we're going till when? An hour. Okay. How does a devotee develop a practical relationship with the spiritual master who is not always physically present? Srila Prabhupada explains this in several places. One develops the relationship by service, by serving the instructions of the spiritual master. The spiritual master may physically be present and or physically not present, sometimes present, sometimes not. But the instructions of the spiritual master are eternally present. And by following those instructions, one develops a practical relationship. Even if one is physically present, if one doesn't serve, what is the relationship? So that's called Vani, Vani Seva. Prabhupada dedicates his Srimad Bhagavatam to his spiritual master with the words, he lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. This is the way. What impels one to commit Vaishnava aparad? Serious illusion and envy. What practical steps can a devotee take to rid himself of this tendency? Srila Kaviraj Goswami says that one should take this verse, Trinadapi Shuni Chena Turodapi Sahishnuna Ramanina Manidena Kirtaniya Saradi, and make a necklace out of it and string it on the thread of the holy name and keep it on his neck for constant remembrance. But sometimes we see devotees, they go to Vrindavan, they buy a little necklace that says Trinadapi Shuni Chena, and that's nice, but the real meaning is that one should always keep in mind that one should be humbler than the bronze tree and more tolerant than the tree, and ready to give all respect to others, especially to Vaishnavas. Right? Krishna says that the sadhava hridayam mayam, sadhava hridayam tvaham, that I'm in the hearts of the devotees, and the devotees are in my heart. I don't know anyone but them, they don't know anyone but me. So we should consider all these things, or we can consider the history of Ramchandra Puri, who became a Vaishnava Aparadi and lost everything. Oh, in different ways we can. Or that Gopal Chapalo who offended Shubhas Thakur. There's so many histories of Vaishnava Aparadis and how Krishna dealt with them. So we can keep that in mind and be instructed. But in general we should be cultivating that mentality of being always humble and ready to respect all others. That will help us. Prabhupada mentions in Srimad Bhagavatam that if not initiated, when one chants 16 rounds daily, follows the four regulative principles, and reads 1 hour of Bhagavatam, one can go back home, back to Godhead. Does this mean one still needs a spiritual master? I don't think I've seen in Bhagavatam if one reads 1 hour, if one does these things. But there is some place in Chaitanya Charitamrita or Srimad Bhagavatam where it's said that if one chants the holy name, that even without a spiritual master, one can go back to Godhead. But that's not the process. By mercy of the holy name, everything is possible. But it doesn't mean that we'll just depend on that. Prabhupada gives the example that Rabindranath Tagore never attended university, but he got an honorary degree from Oxford. So now if the next man thinks, well, Tagore didn't go to the university and he got an honorary degree, so I'll do the same thing. Why should I attend the university? I'll just get an honorary degree from Oxford. That's not the process. Maybe sometimes, by the mercy of Oxford, someone gets a degree, but the rest of us have to enroll, pay our tuition, attend the courses, take the test, then you get your degree. So by the special mercy of the holy name, Krishna, he's independent. He can take anyone. Initiated, not initiated, anything he wants to do, he can do. That's Krishna. But we shouldn't think, well, then I'll just do anything and everything and wait for Krishna, or wait for the holy name, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whatever. We should follow the process. Otherwise, why is Krishna given the process? Why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why are the Goswamis given this process, if not for us to follow? So we should follow the process, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles. If I'm doing these things and becoming purified, why would I not want to take initiation? That's the other side. And that means, Prabhupada one time was asked that if initiation was so important, why is it not mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shikshastak? Then Prabhupada answered that perhaps you've not looked carefully enough, and you've not considered this verse, Trinadapi Sini Chaina Tarodapi Sihishna. If I'm humbler than the blade of grass, but I don't need a spiritual master, hello. Is it wrong to glorify the deities? The purpose of kirtan in front of the deity is to glorify them by chanting the names of the deity. That would also be construed as glorification. By your admission, Srila Prabhupada did not glorify the deity. And other devotees have added the other glorification by chanting the deity's names. Should we, in the same way, not accept other aspects of Krishna consciousness that have been given by devotees after Srila Prabhupada's departure? Okay, let's first of all deal with what I've admitted. I do not admit that Srila Prabhupada did not glorify the deity. Prabhupada was the supreme glorifier of the deity. That's my starting proposition, that Prabhupada was the best glorifier of the deity. And his method of glorifying the deity, among, of course, he had so many methods, but in kirtan, his method of glorifying the deity was to sit before the deity and chant Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktarinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, is that not glorification of the deity? Who do you think the deity is? Who's this Mahamantra all about? Lord Shiva? Mahatma Gandhi? These are the deity's names, Krishna. Hare means Radharani. Krishna and Rama are names of Krishna. So how is it not glorification of Krishna? This Mahamantra, it's called Mahamantra. Supreme Mantra. It's emphasized in all of our books. We're known as the Hare Krishna movement. So how is this not glorification of the deity? All the mantras in Narada Pancharatra, all the mantras, wisdom and Vedic wisdom and understanding have been compressed into these words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Kali Kalmashanashanam, Iti Shodashakananam, these 16 names, Kali Kalmashanashanam, can completely destroy all the sins of Kali Yuga. Nata parataro paya sarva vedeshu drishyate. If you look in all the Vedic literature, you won't find anything better than these 16 names. So how is this not glorification of the deity? It's absolutely glorification of the deity. And it's pakka, first class, authorized, parampara glorification of the deity. Now, if that's all you're doing, you're missing something. You're not glorifying the deity? No, I don't admit that. Now, the next question is, okay, it's been added by devotees. I'm not saying, you know, you can't, I'm not passing a law here. All I did was tell you what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada chanted these mantras. Now, if you want an instruction, I'll add one. Letter to Saurabh, 1976, relating to establishing our temple in Bombay. Quote, for worshipping the deities in Bombay, including Sitaram, there is absolutely no change in worship. Adopt the same method as in our Vrindavan center, simply with three pujaris, just like in Vrindavan. They are all Vishnu Tattva, Ramchandra, Radha Krishna, Gaur Nitai. No additional kirtans. Simply do exactly as in Vrindavan. Is that clear enough? Did I make that up? No additional kirtans. Simply do exactly as in Vrindavan. That means Vrindavan in 1976, by the way. Not Vrindavan now. So if you want, you can chant Jai Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman, Jai Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman. No additional kirtan, simply do exactly in Vrindavan where that was never chanted. But now you go to ISKCON temples and you hear all these things. So you can, you know, it can be done, sure, it can be added. And, you know, I guess it, whatever you want to say about it. But Prabhupada said, no additional kirtans. He didn't say, oh, we're installing Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman in Bombay, so now you have to chant Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman because these are the names of the deities and you have to glorify the deities. Where is this all coming from, gang? No additional kirtans. It's not my fault. What am I supposed to do? It's just tough because it's all become institutionalized in the last 10 or 15 years. But this is what Prabhupada said. No additional kirtans. Simply do exactly as in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was very particular. Not that because everything is in the name of Krishna, therefore everything should be chanted. No additional kirtans. And doesn't mean, so something may be introduced, all right, after Prabhupada's departure. But, so how do you know when it's okay? Well, if it's something Prabhupada said not to do, then it's probably not okay. As a starting place. And I understand I'm going to get in trouble because other people chant these things, and including senior devotees, including some of my favorite senior devotees. But, you know, what am I supposed to do? This is what Prabhupada said. Sorry. There was a question over there. Loud, loud. Is it indicative of lack of faith that the Hare Krishna mantra means everything? I don't want to start, you know, throwing accusations around. It's already I'm in enough trouble, you know. I know devotees who I think have very strong faith in the Hare Krishna mantra and who also chant these other things. So I'm not going to, you know, I've probably already got myself in deep enough trouble. I'm not going to go deeper. My only, maybe, bottom line is that at least to make it safe for those who just want to chant Hare Krishna. Let's at least say that. You know, if you're chanting something else, you know, I won't fight with you. You're probably my senior. You probably have more realization than I do. And, you know, there's so many people like that. But at least if some poor, miserable soul just wants to chant Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vanshadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, then at least he shouldn't have to feel like he's somehow or other breaking all the rules and messing up the tradition and going against the temple, you know, failing to glorify the deities and being impersonal and not having love for Sri Sri Radha Radhanath or Sri Sri Vandanishwara or whoever the local deity happens to be, because he's so stupid that all he does is chant Hare Krishna. At least it should be safe for that poor miserable soul to chant the Maha Mantra and get away with it. Yes.
One more question.
Okay.
Can this also be related to disobeying the order of the spiritual master if this is what Prabhupada
is? Can this be related to disobeying the order of the spiritual master? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut at this time. I've gotten enough trouble, gang. But now you know. Now I've shared with you the same letter that I have on my computer, and now you know that it's there. And for further instructions, consult your local GBC man, temple president, spiritual master, senior devotee, whatever you want. If you talk to me, you know what I'm going to say, so there you are. What is the significance of breaking Ekadashi fast at a specific time the next day? If one fails to break fast at that time, then what is the effect of having best other than Kadasi? I don't know. I really don't. Prabhupada didn't make a particular emphasis on it. But there is emphasis in different scriptures. You're supposed to do it. I don't know that you know, you're going to hellfire and brimstone if you break a Kadasi at the wrong time. But you're supposed to do it. That's all. Beyond that, I'm ignorant. Is that okay? Something I don't have an opinion on, isn't it good? Did Srila Prabhupada allow the devotees to read the Ramayana by either Valmiki or Tulsidas on Ram Nomi? Well, when you read ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that there are so many Ramayans. Tulsidas' Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, and many other Ramayans. The original Ramayana is considered to be Valmiki Ramayana. But apart from that, the history of Lord Ramchandra as told in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is also Ramayana. So why not read that? Is that okay? There are so many Ramayans written by so many people and translated by who knows who. And we already have the tendency to go read so many things. We've already heard that nobody has enough time to actually read Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's the opportunity. On Ram Nomi, there's two big chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, ninth canto. And we can read about the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra from there. Did Prabhupada allow? I don't know that Prabhupada said anything one way or the other. But at least in my presence, I can't ever recall that anybody would just go to Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, we want to read this or that. We read from Prabhupada's books. Even when we didn't have ninth canto, we would read from first canto or second canto. And second canto also, back to the use of Lord Ramchandra there. In first canto, one verse. Second canto, several verses. Ninth canto, two chapters. That's where mine. Yes?
Do you think it possibly could have been because of the time Prabhupada was old and because he didn't have too much of time to get everything short to the book? Because if he sort of added more to it, it could have complicated.
Was it because Prabhupada was old and he wanted to keep things short and simple and he didn't have enough time? A little more than that. First of all, he wanted to concentrate on Krishna, because Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, for example, he could have translated Ramayana, but he chose to translate 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam as Krishna book. So, it was a question of emphasis, first of all. Second of all, I doubt that he would have translated Tulsidas's Ramayana, because the original Ramayana is Valmiki's. That's very authorized. Valmiki Ramayana. Conceivably, Prabhupada had lots and lots of time. He might have given Valmiki Ramayana as authorized Shastra. And there's nothing wrong with it, but where do we get a good translation? That's the problem. Otherwise, Valmiki Ramayana is good. Let's see. Can a liberated devotee participate both in Krishna Lila and Gaura Lila, or does a devotee have to progress from one to the other? This is also dealt with in Brihad Bhagavatamrita in the purports. There, by Krishna's arrangement, as Krishna can expand, the devotees can expand. As Krishna can expand, his devotees can expand. So as Krishna is in more than one place at once, his devotees can also expand into more than one to be with him. In Krishna book we read that Krishna was traveling with some sages and he got an invitation. One was from Bahulashra, big king, and the other was from Sudama, a Brahmin, simple Brahmin. So faced with two invitations, Krishna, he has more facility than like our sannyasis who are faced with two invitations and have to make choices. He just expanded himself into two. And then the sages also expanded themselves and the whole party went to both places at once. So this is there, this potency is there. And in the spiritual world, there are two places. There's the abode of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the very secret part of Goloka Vrindavan. And there's Goloka Vrindavan Vraja. And the devotees are able to participate in both. They can expand. Yes?
I heard that Prabhupada said that the Ramayana and Mahabharata is for the less intelligent.
The Ramayana and Mahabharata is for the less intelligent. Not only Ramayana and Mahabharata, that Mahabharata includes Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, Ramayana, Puranas, they're all for the less intelligent. Sri Sutra Dijabandhunam, Trayi Nashrita Gochara. It's for this reason that the Puranas and the histories have been given. Otherwise we'd all be studying the Vedas and reading Vedanta Sutra. This is Kali Yuga, we can't do it. So it's not that, the Ramayana is, it's all for the less intelligent, and that means us. Is that okay? Is it true that if one does not adhere to the morning, afternoon, and evening ragas, then it affects our mood adversely? Well, it's not the capital offense. It's not the end of the world if you chant the wrong raga at the wrong time. If you really get particular about it, there are particular ragas for very particular times. Srila Prabhupada emphasized this morning melody. That he was particular about. This is the morning tune. Now you can chant the morning tune. You can chant Vibhavari Shesha at sunset if you want, but it's a little weird. You know, you can, if you're serving prasadam, you can serve dessert first, and you know, everyone will still eat, but the people may scratch their heads a little bit. Or if like you're serving Bengali style, then you know it's first the bitter things, then so on, you end with sweet. So you can serve the bitter things last if you want, and the sweet things first. And still, it will be prasadam, it will be transcendental. But there's a system. So there's a system also in these tunes. And Prabhupada didn't make it very particular. He didn't want us to become all great scholars of classical Indian musical tradition and know that because it's now 4:22 and a half, proper raga is such and such. That's not, you know, we're basically meant to chant Hare Krishna. That's the thing. But there were some tunes that Prabhupada didn't very much like. There were some tunes that Prabhupada very much liked. And this one particular tune he specified as the morning tune. And none of us will die from chanting the morning tune in the morning. Right? You might grow to like it. If one is following Krishna consciousness, is it necessary to be initiated? And when does one know that he or she is ready to be initiated? Yes, it's necessary to be initiated. Tad vigyanartam sa gurum eva abhigacchet. Gacchet is imperative. Prabhupada explains one must. Imperative mood means must. So if one wants to get the benefit of vigyan, practical realization of the Vedic understanding, one must approach a spiritual master. Prabhupada said it's not optional. Now, how does one know that he or she is ready to be initiated? There are certain things. First thing is that you have confidence in the person that you wish to receive initiation from. You're ready to be initiated, but you don't have confidence. Then what is that? How do you know that you're ready to enter into a business deal? Well, you've read the contract. You feel comfortable with the terms, you're confident that there'll be a profit in it for you. Otherwise, maybe you want to study that document longer, or go through the company's balance sheet again, or whatever it is. You're not ready because you don't have confidence. Or maybe you look at your own company and say, you know, we're in a shambles, and we're not ready to enter into an agreement with anybody until we get our own house in order. So, of course, these are mundane examples. But first of all, one should have confidence that this spiritual master is qualified. He actually has the credentials. He actually has the capability to bring me back to Godhead. I can place my trust in him. I have confidence in him. Srila Jiva Goswami says that for 1 year, the prospective disciple should examine the spiritual master. And similarly, the spiritual master should examine the prospective disciple. So if I don't have confidence, I'm not ready to surrender, then that's a consideration. The other consideration is, am I willing to follow the instructions? Am I capable of following the instructions? Am I following four regulative principles? Am I going to continue following four regulative principles? Am I going to chant 16 rounds a day? If I'm not, because I'm, initiation means that I'm going to sit there and I'm going to promise in front of the deities, the fire, the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, the spiritual master, I'm going to promise that I'm going to do all of these things. Now, for me to promise and then not do it is most dishonorable. If I don't promise, that's all right. I'm not ready, I'm not prepared, I don't think I can do it, I need more strength. Okay, fine. But then to promise it and not do it is very offensive. So better, then no, let me wait, I'm not yet following. Just to especially, you know, I'm not even following now, but I'm going to be initiated. What is that? That's just cheating. I promise, but I don't mean it. Why? Because everyone else has a guru? Because I want a spiritual name? So one shouldn't cheat. Spiritual master shouldn't cheat the disciple. Disciple shouldn't cheat the spiritual master. We should be willing to follow. Then when I have confidence that yes, this person is capable, yes, I'm willing to surrender, yes, I'm ready to follow his instructions 100%, then let me get initiated. One shouldn't hold back that no, you know, eternally waiting for something to, but when, if I have that need, just like if you understand again the need, if you know that you're hungry and you're going to die if you don't eat, then you get serious about eating. So this is a necessity, that in order to attain spiritual realization, to go back to Godhead, I require the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Initiation is essential. So when I have that determination, then I have to come up to the standard. If I'm chanting only two rounds or four rounds, then I have to come to the standard that I can definitely chant 16 rounds. If I'm following two regular principles, I should follow four regular principles. And on the other side, I should be confident that yes, the person I'm approaching is capable. Is that okay? And then one should do it. In Mahabharata, personalities like Karna, Bhima ate flesh, but some of them are said to be pure devotees. The contradiction is that we stress vegetarianism, and the impetus toward purity or elevation, toward purity or elevation to goodness. Yeah, well, Karna, first of all, he's kind of not in everyone's good books. He wasn't on the right side of the battle. And Bhima, he can eat anything. There's some verse that the Ishras, the great controllers, they can do anything, but we can't imitate. Like the sun. The sun shines on all the places where people pass stool and urine and comes in touch with them by its rays. It evaporates the urine. That means it drinks the urine that everybody passes, including the dogs and everybody. But the sun doesn't become contaminated. The sun is so pure that the place where everyone passes urine becomes sterilized. Now, if we think, well, the sun is drinking urine, why shouldn't I also drink urine? Or Lord Shiva is smoking ganja, why shouldn't I smoke ganja? He's Lord Shiva. Well, if he's doing it, I can do it. But he's Lord Shiva. You know, you catch the Ganges on your head. You drink an ocean of poison. So Bhima can do so many things. But we're not Bhima. So we have to follow the rules and regulations prescribed for us by the spiritual master, by the authorities, and not say, well, but Bhima. Or, but Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus Christ ate fish. Fine, you know. Millions of people, thousands and thousands of people followed him out into the desert. Everyone was starving. And then they said, came and told him, there are all these people following you out here. Everyone's starving. What to do? Is there anything around? They looked around. There's five loaves of fishes and five fishes and five loaves of bread. Is that what it was? Seven? Five? Anyway, a few fish, a few loaves of bread. He said, okay, take that and distribute it. And they fed thousands of people with a few loaves of bread and a few fish. And then people say, well, Jesus Christ ate fish. Yeah, but Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He can eat the whole world. And he fed thousands of people with seven fish. So you do that, and it's okay for you too. Meanwhile, if you think that Jesus Christ appeared on earth to bless your tuna fish factory. So we should pick up the essential understanding and not try to imitate. How to convince non-devotees when preaching that animals have souls? Well, of course, some people will not be convinced under any circumstances. But Prabhupada gave some of the following arguments. Prabhupada said, what's the difference between a living being and a living animal, and a living person and a dead person? Soul. Consciousness is a symptom of the soul. So what's the difference between a living animal and a dead animal? Same. Consciousness. And what is consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Or Prabhupada gave this argument, that you eat, the animal eats. You sleep, the animal sleeps. You have family affection, the animal has family affection. You want to live, the animal wants to live. All these points of similarity, only this one point that the animal has no soul. What is that? On so many points, same practically. But the animal has no soul. Prabhupada said, call the dog a bad name and hang him. The animal has no soul, therefore we can eat him. And just as they do that in war, you know, they give a bad name to the enemy, and then you can shoot him wholesale. You know, because he's a gook or he's a whatever, you know, disparaging name they give. So he's not really a human being, he's just one of those things, and you can kill him wholesale. Now the same thing, animals have no souls, kill them wholesale. Or animals are less intelligent. All right, less intelligent. But Prabhupada gave the argument that if you say to your father, Father, this son is less intelligent, let's kill him and eat him. Will the father say, oh yeah, that's a good idea. He may be less intelligent, but the father has affection for all the sons. It's unfortunate that the people who bathe in the blood of the lamb also want to bathe in the blood of the cow, the sheep, everything. If a devotee's guru has fallen down and he is initiated, does the devotee have to take initiation from another guru again, or will Srila Prabhupada suffice to take that devotee back to Godhead? One should be properly guided, at least. What do we know about what the details of what Srila Prabhupada taught? So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in such an instance, one should take reinitiation. Punaroy mantra grahan koribe. But even if he doesn't formally take initiation, he should be guided properly. He should have someone who he accepts that this person will take responsibility for taking me back to God. Maybe formal, not formal, but he should be under proper guidance. Is that okay? You seem to have a quizzical look there, sir. Is that right? If a Gaudiya Math sannyasi visits our Aniskan initiated devotee's home, and devotees are invited to go hear Krishna Katha, what should devotees do? Well, you might consider respectfully declining the invitation. Because Srila Prabhupada, of course, it's nice that Gaudiya Sannyasis visit. But Srila Prabhupada, I mentioned before that he was very discriminating. That means he was very careful and particular. And Srila Prabhupada said about his godbrothers and Gaudiya Math members that they are very competent, that they cannot help us, but they are very competent to harm us. So Prabhupada was very protective about his followers, and he therefore advised us that we should not go to hear from, and he was very particular, devotees would be going off to this mat or that mat when Prabhupada was present. Why are they going there? Who has told them they can go there? You know, very particular Prabhupada would be. You think, hear some Krishna Katha, and it may be very nice, but so often the Krishna Katha is blended with evangelistic efforts, to put it mildly. Evangelistic efforts or aggressive evangelistic efforts, that why should you be in ISKCON, you should join us. And that's not very much appreciated. Otherwise, nice Gaur Katha, Krishna Katha, nice saintly Vaishnavas. But we, on that consideration, we may choose to be particularly careful. And if you check with your Guru Maharaj or whoever, and they say, well, fine, you go, you go. We also sometimes, under some particular circumstances, when Prabhupada considered it appropriate, we would go. That is to say, when there was some formal invitation and everything was carefully considered, then we would go. And frankly, Gaudiya Math has the same policy toward everyone else. Their members don't just wander around here and there accepting invitations this way and that way. Everything is very thoughtfully done so that things will not be disturbed in their institutions. Now, these are some of the considerations. From a spiritual point of view, or an absolute point of view, Krishna Katha is Krishna Katha. But we have particular considerations with the professional reciters, which many ISKCON devotees, regardless of everything Prabhupada said, love to go here. Prabhupada was particular. They don't go here from the professional reciters because they don't have the spiritual potency. And so often they preach something mundane or confused or misdirected, and you go here and you become polluted. Or they preach Mayavadi philosophy. So we don't expect those difficulties from members of the Gaudiya Math who are all respected Vaishnavas. But sometimes there are other problems which we would just prefer to avoid. And in this way, we don't commit offenses toward them and they don't disturb our activities. We should always be very respectful to all the Vaishnavas from all the institutions who are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or many devotees of Krishna. We should always respect them, we should always honor them, but we may not always mix with them. Srila Prabhupada is a little particular about that.
Maharaj, devotees might make mention that Prabhupada gave the instruction to his disciples that they can go out and see
I was there, actually. The instruction is cited that Srila Prabhupada said that we should, of course, the way it's cited is sometimes you can hear all sorts of versions from all the way up to Srila Prabhupada said we should surrender to, you know, whoever they want to mention. But I was there, physically present in the room. Srila Prabhupada was with Srila Narayan Maharaj, and Prabhupada was in a very, those were his last days, and Prabhupada was in a very humble mood. And he said to Srila Narayan Maharaj that sometimes these devotees may have some questions, so sometimes they may come to you. You please try to help them. And Prabhupada said to us that sometimes you may have some questions, so you may sometimes go to Srila Narayan Maharaj, or he actually said Srila Sridhar Maharaj or Srila Narayan Maharaj, and they will try to help you. So that was there. It was definitely there that Prabhupada had some regard for them, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Narayan Maharaj, and he gave us that instruction that sometimes we might approach them if we had some question. He said that once, maybe twice, once that I know of, and that was it. And the whole rest of the time, because I was also there for so many months when Prabhupada was there, Prabhupada was talking about the GBC, Prabhupada was talking about the senior devotees, Prabhupada was talking about how will things go on. The whole thing was ISKCON and the GBC members and the senior devotees and the sannyasis. And once he said that if we had some questions, we might sometimes go to Srila Sridhar Maharaj and Srila Narayan Maharaj. And if we just had done that, sometimes gone to Srila Narayan Maharaj or Srila Sridhar Maharaj with a question, everything would be probably a lot better than it is now. But now it's got to, you know, Srila Prabhupada wanted us all to go here from Srila Narayan Maharaj. He wanted us all to go here from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Simply not true. Some of, particularly the senior members, we had some questions, we could go. And, you know, the good senior devotees, senior Vaishnavas, that could advise us on some points, that would be nice. But now it's made out that Srila Prabhupada, even that the only successor to Srila Prabhupada is Srila such and such, and Prabhupada wanted us all to hear from him, and if you don't go hear from him, you're not following what Prabhupada said, and on, and that's all malarkey. It's really bilge. It's just not true. You know, regardless of what we think of any person or anyone's instructions, how, what kind of adhikar they may have, and so on. As far as objectively speaking, what Srila Prabhupada's instructions were, those weren't them. But people stretch the truth for evangelistic purposes. And that's all it is. It's just stretching the truth considerably. Ain't true. Okay. Any question about that? You know, if I wanted to sell, I don't know what it is, green tablecloths, you know, that I would come around to all these contemplatives and say, you know, Srila Prabhupada wanted every devotee to have a green tablecloth. You know, and if you don't have a green tablecloth, Krishna never accepts, it's not prasadam. You're just eating boga unless you have a green tablecloth, and that's what Prabhupada said. You know, and what Prabhupada really said is he went to some devotee's house and said, this green tablecloth is nice. So that's why Srila Prabhupada didn't want us mixing unnecessarily, because then you hear things that Prabhupada supposedly said that Prabhupada never said, and claims are made that are just over the top.
Besides Prabhupada, I mean, you seem to emphasize it a bit lightly in your answer, but you see that Prabhupada really did not want us to go there. In so many other places, he really said that
Oh yeah, well that's of course a history of many years. Prabhupada on various occasions really slammed the devotees for Radhakund and the Babajis and Gaudiya Math, and Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was not discriminating. Wow! Prabhupada was so discriminative. Prabhupada was so absolutely particular. You know, why did they go there? There was one occasion particularly well known for those who were around in the 70s, and particularly anyone who went. There was some parikrama, the devotees went, they visited one Gaudiya Math, and someone spoke very nicely Krishna Katha, and then the devotees came back to Mayapur, and Prabhupada found out that we'd gone to that particular place. And then Prabhupada started drilling everybody, all the, especially the leaders who were there. What did he say? Then what did he say? Then asked some other devotee, what did he say? Why did you go? And then it slowly came out that the person had spoken, while speaking Krishna Katha, he had spoken in a subtly disparaging way. That, of course, you know, so many hippies. You know, is it basically to say, well, of course Prabhupada got a batch of hippies. You know, that's the best he could do. And just a little bit, you know, just introducing something that Prabhupada considered was offensive to him personally, and that was perhaps intended to damage the faith of his disciples. So Prabhupada was, you know, on that occasion, just drilling. You know, and then why did you go there? Who told you you could go? And then the final word was, you have all been scarred. You know, so Prabhupada was particular. In one sense, Prabhupada was very, you know, the largest possible vision. On the spiritual platform, Prabhupada had absolute transcendental vision of all living entities. And he also had the maximum amount of of compassion and you know, every good quality. But Prabhupada was a very, very sharp person. Prabhupada was not sentimental. He had the highest devotional sentiments, but he was not a sentimentalist. And he was not a person to have, you know, his movement steamrolled by some persons who would look for an opportunity to take advantage. Prabhupada was very, very sharp. And he detected on various occasions that there were deliberate attempts being made to get a wedge into the Krishna consciousness movement or to do different things. And Prabhupada was very sorry about it because he actually wanted, you know, why shouldn't everybody be working together for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement? But you find, even he published in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that unfortunately we are surrounded by neophyte godbrothers who Prabhupada detected were envious. It didn't have to be that way, but that's how Prabhupada saw that it was. They weren't happy. They were not happy that they were not able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and Srila Prabhupada was. They weren't happy about it. There was one incident. This is Prabhupada wrote a great letter. The head of one Gaudiya institution wrote a letter to Srila, not wrote a letter, wrote, sent an invitation for some Golden Jubilee festival on the occasion of whatever anniversary it was of, I guess, the founding of Gaudiya Math or something like that. And they announced what the program would be and who the speakers would be, and they kind of recapped the glorious activities of the Mutt all over the world. And they even mentioned that there were followers, that the Mutt had followers all over the world. And they even mentioned the successful preaching of someone who had been sent to London by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they didn't mention a word about Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wrote to the person, and actually at that time Prabhupada was trying to get some concession, I think, for land in Mayapur, and this institution was either not helping or deliberately standing in the way. And Prabhupada wrote to him, and, you know, still extending like a spirit of cooperation, but Prabhupada knew what was going on. Prabhupada wrote to him, I've said, I've received your invitation or your brochure about the Golden Jubilee, and I've noticed that you've mentioned the activities of followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur all over the world. He said, but one thing, he said, that why you have not mentioned anything about our humble activities of spreading Mahaprabhu's message in the Western countries. You know, they were dead silent. The only person who had actually gone out of India and spread Krishna consciousness was Srila Prabhupada. And they talked all about Krishna consciousness spreading everywhere, and they didn't mention it. Now, what is that? Prabhupada didn't think it was just an accidental oversight. They deliberately excluded him. The Prabhupada said, you have mentioned the successful activities of Swami such and such in spreading Krishna consciousness in London in 1940, whatever it was. He said, if it was so successful, why did Guru Maharaj call him back? Then Prabhupada had this wonderful line. He said, don't you know the history? And of course, everybody knows the history. How Guru Maharaj was dissatisfied and called him back. But you've mentioned his activities from, you know, back in previous decades, and you're silent about me. Why? So it's like not happy stuff to talk about, and I'd rather talk about things that are inspiring and encouraging and enlivening and so on. But I suppose we should all know about these things, because people say things that are not true or misrepresent things and with, you know, very purposeful ideas in mind. So we should know about these things. That's unfortunately the case. Mm-hmm.
There's the temple that's been built up the north coast of Durban, and I've seen the Gaudiya Math devotees using Prabhupada's name in Prabhupada's picture and also collecting funds to build their temple. Is there anything that we can do against that?
You've seen people from another institution using Prabhupada's name and Prabhupada's pictures and collecting funds. Is there anything you can do about that? Chant Hare Krishna and out-preach them. You can press a lawsuit or something, but why do that? That's not our...
But is it correct for them to also...
Is it correct? From where they sit? Sure, anything's correct. It's correct. From where we sit, it's not very palatable, is it? And of course, this is what you see in all of the Gaudiya institutions that are interested in getting ISKCON members as their supporters, contributors, followers, and initiated devotees. There's always a picture of, you know, their Guru Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, you know, either because the picture was taken together or because they put two pictures together on the same thing. And, you know, you that's like the standard thing. You know, I want to get you on my side, so first I say all these wonderful things about your Guru. And then, you know, I start putting in my pitch. Now that it's like this, first I soften you up. I talk about how great your Guru Maharaj is. Then I talk about how close I was to your Guru Maharaj. Then I talk about how much, you know, your Guru Maharaj had confidence in me. Then I talk about how, you know, basically you should be on my team. It's nothing that any Madison Avenue advertising company doesn't know about. Yes.
It's like when you go into the shops in Loy Bazaar,
Maharaj. Yeah, exactly. You go into the shop of Loy Bazaar, and especially around Kartik time or Gaur Purnima, every clothwala has Prabhupada's picture. It's exactly that. Every clothwala, every mukutwala, every beadwala, everybody who wants to sell you anything has Prabhupada's picture there. Why? Because, you know, and then you'll meet them and say, oh yes, Swami Maharaj used to come to my shop. So Prabhupada was sharp, we should be a little sharp. Okay? Yes?
Srila Prabhupada's instructions, you know, they come from different sources, these classes, these lectures, these letters, the purports, for different time, places, and circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, even sometimes he gave contradicting instructions to different, how do we, you know, like relate to them and accept them for ourselves?
How do we accept contradictory instructions? Well, I've written a whole essay about this. Those who have the folio database can read my little essay, What to Make of What We Find. I think that's what it's called.
What to Make of What You Get.
Yeah, something like that. It's up in the front of the folio database. If you have the folio database, look for it. In fact, I'll look for it now. I'll tell you what it's called. It's called... Front Matter. Yeah, What to Make, the Bhaktivedanta database, What to Make of What You Find. And that gives a little essay that answers that question. You can, those who have the database, you can print out a copy for other devotees if you want and tack it on the board someplace. It's not very long, a few pages. Basically, the books are for everyone, but then when you go through other things, lectures, conversations, especially letters and conversations, then you have to start to be discriminating because Prabhupada's talking to a particular person. And what's meant for one person may not be for the other person. I think there's some famous conversation where Prabhupada was saying that the duty of a sannyasi is to travel. He must always be traveling. He should never sit in one place. 3 days. Otherwise he starts to become, you know, rotten. He must always be traveling, always moving. This is sannyas. And then he turned to some other sannyasi who he wanted to stay in Vrindavan. You should always stay in Vrindavan. Don't go. Without my permission, you should not, you know, go anywhere. Just simply stay in Vrindavan. You know, so exactly the opposite instructions, because Prabhupada wanted different people to do different things. And there are different instructions that are relevant for different people. So, you know, the Gurukul is the best service. And then deity worship is the best service. There is no better service than book distribution. You know, everything's the best service. But it depends you know, if you're the recipient of the letter, it's the best service for you. But it doesn't mean that because now I wrote to you that book distribution is the best service, now the pujaris should all quit and go on book distribution. Or that the book distributors should start hitting the pujaris over the head with their letters. You know, you guys are all in Maya because you're not in book distribution. Now, it's true that book distribution has this, you know, enormous importance that we don't want to underestimate, and if the pujaris can get a chance to go out on book distribution, so much the better. But instructions from Prabhupada and statements from Srila Prabhupada have to be very carefully considered, not just that we gather that Prabhupada was speaking for the folio Vedabase and that his business was to, you know, you go there and whatever's a hit, that's what Prabhupada wanted. Now, it has evidential value, what Prabhupada said, but context matters. Context matters. You see that 700 times Prabhupada said one thing, and one time he said something else. Well, that matters also, doesn't it? That tells you something. You know, 100,000 times Prabhupada said, avoid these people. And one time he said, you can go to them if you have questions. Well, that all has to be weighed in the balance. Which, of course, not everyone is eager to have us do. But in all of our activity, therefore, spiritual master is required. Our senior devotees, especially those who've been personally instructed by Prabhupada, personally initiated by Srila Prabhupada, they should know these things. So you have a question, should I do this, should I do that? Therefore the spiritual master is there. Otherwise we're just out there with Prabhupada's so many instructions and we really don't know how to apply them. Of course, some things are obvious. Chant Hare Krishna is obvious. Read the books is obvious. But the spiritual master will help us sort through these different instructions and know what is appropriate for us. Then you don't have to think too much. The problem is solved. You don't have to study all the Vedas. Okay? A little more time. Is it true that Srila Prabhupada once said that anyone who is outside the Krishna consciousness movement and tries to make spiritual advancement is actually an illusion? What he said is, transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engage in Krishna consciousness is living in a great hallucination. That's actually what he said. If this is true, then does this refer to ISKCON? Yes, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. What is the position of the other branches of the Chaitanya tree in relation to this and their ability to grant access to people for spiritual advancement? Means present branches. We wish them well. They're spreading Krishna consciousness in their own way, and we wish them well. We have a particular affinity for Srila Prabhupada and for his success in spreading Krishna consciousness, his contribution, his way of spreading Krishna consciousness, his formula, his everything. The society that he probably said gave buckets of blood for, and now everything's ISKCON. You know, I'm also ISKCON. I'm also ISKCON. You know, everyone is ISKCON except ISKCON. But Srila Prabhupada actually said that he gave buckets of blood for this society, so it means something. And other Gaudiya Vaishnavas are spreading Krishna consciousness in their own way, and we wish them well. So what is it to us? We're following Srila Prabhupada. If that's enough for us, fine. And if it's not enough, then you know, okay, go look at something else. But we have confidence that Srila Prabhupada, you know, what do they say? Nothing succeeds like success. Prabhupada was successful. And when Prabhupada was here, nobody else was coming forward. No one else came forward when Prabhupada was present. Let me help. let me also join the activities of the society. Did anyone come forward? All those people who were so close with Prabhupada and who, you know, just wanted to carry out Prabhupada's instructions when he was present, did they come forward? No. And now you can go to India and you'll meet like at least 40 people who urged Prabhupada to go to America. You know, they were the ones who gave Prabhupada the idea or inspired him. You can meet 272 people who saw him off on the, you know, on the Jala Tirtha. Prabhupada had a phrase, and we have to believe it. That was one of Prabhupada's stock phrases, and we have to believe it. One lady mentioned to me during the break, we had some discussion about discrimination, from which it became clear to me that this word discrimination has got a bad rap. It now has been taken to mean, in, you know, just the way words evolve, it now has this real spin to it, that discrimination means that you really want to keep somebody down, that you're really against somebody. So we have anti-discrimination laws. You know, we want to erase discrimination from South African society and so on. But originally discrimination just means telling one thing from another. It's not that Prabhupada, if he had discrimination, it meant that he hated something. It just meant that Prabhupada knew that this is a screwdriver and this is a pliers. You use the pliers for what you want the pliers for, and the screwdriver for what you want to use the screwdriver for. So in that sense, the word was suggested differentiation. Prabhupada could differentiate between, you know, blue and purple, and between pakoras and samosas. If you can't differentiate, you have a problem. So that's the original meaning of discrimination. It doesn't mean that you're a bad guy or that you hate somebody else. It just means that you can, you know, you can tell the difference between one thing and another thing. Interesting what happens to words, isn't it? Please comment on the situation where a person who does not really have a proper understanding of the need for a spiritual master accepts the guru and based on sentimental invalid reasons. What are the consequences for the, quote, disciple and for the guru? At one time there was one boy who had been, he was actually the disciple of some guruji, you know, one of these Ashtanga Yoga gurujis, and he became attracted to Krishna consciousness and especially to Srila Prabhupada. So when Prabhupada came to Boston in 1969 or 70, this boy came. And he was being very appreciative of Prabhupada. When Prabhupada came, I remember, came out of the temple, he kept Prabhupada's shoes and he was helping Prabhupada put on his shoes. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, you were so nice." So he was very keen. And he went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada and asked if he could be initiated. And Prabhupada said, first you should understand the philosophy. He said, first you should read our books and understand the philosophy. Prabhupada said, if today you come on sentiment, tomorrow you will leave on sentiment. That's the sentimental platform. Sentimental platform, mental platform, that's their characteristic. That, you know, today I come on sentiment, and tomorrow my sentiment changes and I leave. So, but the intellectual platform, or the platform of the intelligence, is its nature is that that's where discrimination is. It's on the platform of intelligence, where you analyze, you differentiate, and then on the basis of your analysis, you make a firm decision. The mental or emotional platform is just, well, I love it. Yeah, I hate it. Flip flop. But when you analyze, when you understand, then when you make a commitment, it's firm. You know why you're doing this. It's not just because, you know, I feel like it or because today is Tuesday. It's because you really know why you have to do this. You really know why you want to do this. You really know the difference between this and the next thing. So Prabhupada told that boy that first you read our books and understand something. So, and in fact, the boy then didn't get initiated. it turned out to be a sentiment that came and went. Otherwise, we find ourselves in difficulty. We pledge our fidelity, we pledge to follow certain principles, we make a vow that we're going to dedicate ourselves, and then our sentiment changes. And then we don't want to do it anymore. Well, I didn't realize what it meant. This, that, this, that. And then we become dishonorable. We become dishonorable because the vow in the Vedic culture is a very serious thing. You don't just take vows on Tuesday and take them back on Thursday. Maharaj Dasarath died rather than go back on his vow. He banished Lord Ramchandra to the forest and gave up his life because he made a vow and that was it. So it indicates that we shouldn't make vows not knowing what it means. And he got a surprise at the end. But we should know what we're promising to do, why we're promising to do it, to whom we're promising. We should walk in knowing what we're doing. That will be good for us, and it will be good for the spiritual master. The spiritual master doesn't want to have to deal with people who are coming and going because they really didn't mean it and are not really committing themselves. They're just saying that they commit themselves. Why not be serious? And if that means that you hold back, then hold back. Prabhupada, how many years before Prabhupada got initiated? 12? So many. But then when he took initiation, that was it for the rest of his life. He made the orders of his spiritual master, his life and soul. And that's what we should do. Now, not advising that everybody just wait 12 years, because Prabhupada did. But we should be serious. Prabhupada once mentioned that all his disciples are pure devotees. Does this mean that his disciples are pure devotees presently, or that the potential of becoming pure? Can we extrapolate this to his something grand disciples? Well, Prabhupada, this word pure devotee is pure devotee is a very interesting thing, because sometimes it means a person who's Uttamadhikari, Mahabhagwad, absolutely not a pinch of material desire. And sometimes it means anyone who's wearing tulsi beads and wearing tilak. Uttamadhikari even is used that way, right? Yeah. So pure devotees means, Prabhupada had used the same terms for different things at different times. But generally, he used the different same term for different things at different times. The one letter that comes to mind, we had a godbrother, we still have a godbrother named Siddhasrupa Ananda Goswami, who had been a guru on his own before he met Prabhupada and had followers, initiated disciples and so on, and then surrendered to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada gave him sannyas also, and more or less many of the people who had been his followers continued to be under his direction. And one of those followers who was, as I recall, it was his right-hand man, a very dedicated person, wrote to Srila Prabhupada, and I didn't see the original letter, but from the response it's clear that you have written about Siddhasrupa Ananda being a pure devotee. Because that was the idea. There was still a kind of a clique around this godbrother that his people are, that he's a pure devotee. So this devotee had written that something about Siddhasrupa Ananda being a pure devotee, and Prabhupada said, it's nice that you have appreciated that Siddhasrupa Ananda as a pure devotee. He said, but there's so many pure devotees. He said, our society is full of pure devotees, both Siddhasrupa Ananda and non-Siddhasrupa Ananda. Not that only he isn't a pure devotee and can go back to Godhead, Prabhupada said, all of our members are pure devotees and they can all go back to Godhead. But Prabhupada mentioned Mr. Nair, who was the person who had tried to cheat him on the Bombay land. He said, only Mr. Nair can't go. Everyone else can go. So, as Prabhupada was appreciating all of the devotees in ISKCON, it will help us to appreciate all of our devotees in ISKCON, both this one and non this one. You know, all the different, anyone who's come to the society, they must all be pure devotees, otherwise why have they come to the society of pure devotional service? So Krishna consciousness means to appreciate the good qualities. It's the characteristic of a saintly person that he sees some good quality and tries to magnify that. As the quality of a low person, that he sees some bad quality and tries to magnify that. Prabhupada said that bees look for pus, the flies look for pus, and bees go after the nectar. So if we look hard enough, we can find the bad qualities in everyone. Everyone except ourselves. But the real quality that we should try to cultivate is to try to appreciate the good qualities of the others. Prabhupada wrote one letter. It was either to Brahmananda Prabhu or Tamal Krishna Maharaj, that I received your letter from whichever one it was, appreciating, you know, say it was Brahmananda Maharaj. So he said, I've received your letter appreciating the good qualities of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Similarly, I've received a letter from Tamal Krishna Maharaj appreciating your good qualities. And Prabhupada appreciated that. It's not that Prabhupada was in transcendental bliss getting all the complaint letters from the devotees. This one is this, and this one is that, and this one stole my dolly, and this one, you know. That wasn't ecstasy for Srila Prabhupada, but when he would get letters like that appreciating such and such person has appreciated the good qualities of some other devotee, well, that's nectar, because that means that the devotees are becoming advanced. Even Prabhupada, he appreciated the qualities of his disciples. Prabhupada was appreciating, you know, some little thing, and Prabhupada would, you are actually, Prabhupada would say, you are all representatives of my Guru Maharaj, sent to help me. You know, so what were we? We were a batch of, you know, hippies and bums picked up from different dung heaps around the world. But Prabhupada took it the other way, that you're all sent by my Guru Maharaj to help me. You're all representatives of my Guru Maharaj. So that was Prabhupada. Even, you know, sometimes we don't like to hear the class given by this person or that person. You know, he doesn't give such a good class. I'll wait till that person gives class. Or, you know, his classes are a little bogus, or, you know, this, that. But Prabhupada, he was sitting in Vrindavan. He wrote to temple president of New York. He said that, I am sitting here in Vrindavan, and I am listening to how they are giving class, and I am enjoying. And then he wrote that, as I am doing, so you should also do. And he said, don't try to be a greater Paramahansa than your Guru Maharaj. But Prabhupada himself was appreciating the devotees, the ISKCON devotees, his disciples, and how they were doing. Any person, even not members, if they were doing some service, Prabhupada would appreciate. The story is there. Some bum came up, stumbled into Second Avenue, and put some toilet paper on the altar. Ah, he's doing service. Prabhupada would appreciate. So if we develop, that will help us. It will help our hearts. It will help our society. It will help our preaching. It will help our families. It will help our community. It will help everything. We just have this attitude of appreciating the other devotees. Very easy to, you know, stick a hole or stick a pin in anyone. But if we assiduously cultivate this mentality, my business is to appreciate the other devotees. You know, not that we all become, you know, like New Age, slurpy, sentimentalists, you know, where we just pour it on thick like butter. But that we genuinely, you know, it's sometimes not easy to appreciate someone else's good qualities. It's a little bit of work. But if we genuinely try to develop, not just as a a social skill or a managerial technique. But if we actually try to develop the vision of seeing the sincerity in others, the desire to serve Krishna, the good qualities that the other devotees have, that will help us so much. That will make our hearts, even if they don't actually have as many good qualities as, but they do. But even if we make the error of somehow going overboard in appreciation, that era is so much better than the other one. You know, we have devotees who, you know, their hearts are so tormented because they can't see any good qualities in anyone else. You know, everyone else is, you know, and there's people who were like remnants of their former selves because they've been infected with this disease of criticism, and it's just eaten them up. You know, there's like nothing left of them except bile. And how can you execute devotion, you know, loving devotional service in the association of devotees when your heart has become so damaged that way? So that won't help us. But to try to develop this quality of appreciating anyone who's engaged in devotional service, there's, I think it was either Gopal Bhatta or Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. It's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He just wouldn't hear any criticism of Vaishnavas. Just wouldn't hear it. Whatever was said, he was able, all the devotees were engaged in Krishna service. He notably cultivated that mood. That, and whatever you may say, they're all engaged in Krishna service. You just wouldn't hear criticism of the Vaishnavas. In so many places we're told Vaishnava aparadhas can just sink our boat. Mad elephant fence. And what harm will come to us from appreciating the other devotees? Okay, we may sometimes make some sentimental misjudgment, depend on someone who can't always be depended on. But all things considered, the benefit that comes to us from appreciating the Vaishnavas, and actually how wonderful the devotees are. You know, out of all the souls in this universe, or all the souls in the creation, some small number are interested in spiritual realization. And out of them, some small number are serious about devotional service. And out of them, some small number, still smaller number, have dedicated their lives to the purpose, have come forward to be counted as devotees of Krishna. Now, out of the millions and billions of living entities, some small number have come forward and are sincerely trying to serve Krishna. So by appreciating the good qualities of those, of course, anyone may have good qualities, and we can try to appreciate that. That will help us in preaching. But especially by appreciating the good qualities of the devotees, we'll only benefit. It will only help us. We have so many problems that get in our way, in our personal advancement, in our missionary activities, in our practical affairs. So many of them we can just get rid of by this one method. This will just, it's like a big spring cleaning. We just get rid of so many bad thoughts that we have about other devotees, even not bad sayings, you know, bad dealings, just in the mind. It's mentioned that if you see a Vaishnava and you're not happy to see him, that's an aparadha. Yeah, just why did this person come? And we should just, it means our heart has a problem. We have a heart disease. That a Vaishnava, of all people, a Vaishnava somehow walked in my door and I'm unhappy. Why did this person come? So we should have it the other way, that we should be so, consider ourselves so fortunate to have the association of the other devotees. Big, small, medium, doesn't matter. All the Vaishnavas. Jai Bhajai Shevara, Abhakti Hinchar. Chaitanya Charitamrita. And anyone who's engaged in the service of Krishna, Ye Bhaje, Sheva, he's great. And a Bhaktahin Char, it's only the non-devotees who are wretched and miserable. We should try to make the wretched and miserable persons into devotees, and those who are devotees we should appreciate. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.